Like a lot of governors, Missouri Governor Parson declaring state of emergency because of civil unrest, specifically in Democrat-run cities, Kansas City and St. Louis, mobs in Richmond Hills, Ferguson, attacking police officers, protesters in Ferguson ignoring curfew, launching fireworks and other a lot of attacks on police officers going on, as well as in some instances, citizens as well. And as I mentioned earlier, there have been random piles of bricks that have been showing up in areas which suggest a coordination from some level. Police in Kansas City telling residents in a tweet yesterday that if anyone knows of any information about where these pallets of bricks are coming from, to let them know. There was a tweet sent out by one rioter in Manhattan saying, "Yo, we got bricks, we got bricks." Hashtag rioters in Manhattan, a big cache of bricks found there. And there are reports throughout other parts of the country that these pallets of bricks are showing up. And of course, law enforcement's trying to determine exactly if someone is coordinating this, who that individual or group may be, and where these bricks are coming from. Don Luzader is here, and he has our latest news update.
All right, keeping with that theme, hundreds of people marched down Battlefield Road from Glenstone and Springfield over the weekend to protest police brutality and the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Many wore face masks and held signs that read, "Don't shoot," and "I can't breathe." One protester demanded to be arrested. Police offered to give him a ticket, but he eventually got his wish. They put him in handcuffs, booked him into jail, and released him. No other arrests have been reported, and there have been no serious injuries. Following protests over the weekend in St. Louis and Kansas City, Governor Parson put the National Guard on standby. He signed a state of emergency declaration late Saturday due to civil unrest. The governor added that he was saddened by the death of George Floyd, but also, he says, by the acts of violence that have transpired across our nation and our state. And police in Nix are investigating vandalism at City Hall after the side of the building facing Highway 14 was spray-painted. Employees worked on Sunday to get expletive words of the name George Floyd off the building. Floyd died while in police custody, prompting a weekend where protests ran rampant across the country. That is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Sunny 82 today, partly cloudy 60 tonight, sunny 85 tomorrow, and a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 tomorrow with a high of 87. It is 61 and sunny. I want to play for you Van Jones. Van Jones of the Obama administration early on. And now he does contributing, I believe it's for CNN, one of the news outlets. And here's what he had to say in terms of whom the black community should really fear.
It's not the racist white person who's in the Ku Klux Klan that we have to worry about. It's the white liberal Hillary Clinton supporter walking her dog in Central Park who would tell you right now, people like that. "Oh, I don't see race. Race is no big deal to me. I see us all as the same. I give to charities." But the minute she sees a black man who she does not respect, or who she has a slight thought against, she weaponized race like she had been trained by the Aryan Nation. A Klan member could not have been better trained to pick up the police and pick up her phone and tell the police, "It's a black man, African-American man, come get him." So even the most liberal, well-intentioned white person has a virus in his or her brain that can be activated at an instant. And so what you're seeing now is a curtain falling away. And those of us who have been burdened by this every minute, every second of our entire lives are fragile right now. We are fragile right now. We are tired.
All right, so there's Van Jones saying, listen, the real folks that the African-American community needs to worry about, it's not the Klansmen. It is the Hillary Clinton-supporting white liberals. Now let's just look at that for a bit, shall we? Let's look at it from a more broad view. And this, I believe, is further evidence of a point that I've made for a very long time. When it comes to the complaints that people have about racial injustice, what parts of the country does it constantly occur in? To Van Jones' point, it happens in cities that are run by oftentimes white liberals, but certainly liberals of different colors. Minneapolis, 13 members on that council. One's Green Party, the rest of them are Democrats. I mean, every one of these major cities that you're seeing, it has been a one-party rule for generation after generation after generation. If you look at a map, a county-by-county map, many of you have seen these maps. These, you know, this massive sea of red, and then you have these little concentrated blue areas. Guess what? Take a map of where all this violence is occurring. Take a map of where we are constantly hearing about racial inequality, income inequality, police brutality, and you can overlap the two maps, and they'll be virtually identical. While people like de Blasio and others want to say that, yeah, well, I mean, this is what happens when Donald Trump is president, then why is it constantly happening in the areas that didn't vote for Donald Trump? These are the questions that should be discussed. I mean, that is a totally, completely genuine question. I have these panel discussions. Mark my words. Oh, there are going to be town hall meetings once this settles down where we have tough discussions about what we need to do in this country. But there will not be any tough discussions. Every one of the tough discussions is going to go the exact same way. An acknowledgement that racism exists in law enforcement. And if you don't agree with it, you're part of the problem. And you have no place on the stage for the discussion. It will be a pretty monolithic, it'll be the exact same discussion that happens over and over and over again. Well, that's not a tough discussion. That is a discussion of validation. That is a discussion that reinforces what, you know, people are just saying over and over and over again. You want to have a real, true discussion. Why is it that these things occur in cities that have one party rule, and that's the Democrat Party for generation after generation? And I'm not going to give you a one sentence answer that answers that question, but that's why, if we want to have a real true discussion to explore things, that how can we not ask that question and discuss it? Now, of course, the people who are in charge of those cities, who are in charge of the town hall meetings, who are in charge of these tough discussions, like, they're going to do that. I mean, there's going to be no self-reflection, because it's all going to be divert away from us, away from us, away from us, and blame our political adversaries. And in the meantime, who suffers? Do the cities get any better? Do these inequalities get any better? All of the complaints of any sort of inequality, educationally speaking, economically speaking, racially speaking, are more severe in these parts of the country. That's just fact. Now, I happen to believe, and this is to a degree what Van Jones is saying, this is what I refer to, I didn't coin this, I've heard it before, I mean, some call it the soft bigotry of low expectations. I just think of it as bigotry. The reason it's referenced as soft bigotry is because it doesn't seem like an offensive position to take. And that is essentially much of what we heard, that, well, they just don't know what else to do. That is the position that, as Van Jones describes, the white liberal, the Hillary Clinton supporting liberals, that on one hand donate to all the right causes, but when it really comes down to it, there's a difference there in how they view the races. And you can hear it in their excuse making, as if in their minds they think that there's just no other way that people of color know how to express themselves. Well, that's just wrong. during the Baltimore riots. Another one-party rule system. That mayor famously, you know, would say, well, let them just get it out of their system, like they're children. People rise to the level of expectation, but they also lower themselves to a level of expectation if you set the bar low. And there is this tragic, bigoted mindset that some people have in this country. And again, I think this is to a degree what Van Jones was saying. It's the white liberals on the left who have this demeaning perspective of certain groupings of people. And, well, they just can't help. That's what, just let them go ahead and throw their little temper tantrum like they're children, as if they're not capable of any other form of expressing their dissatisfaction. And while different people have different instincts, the idea that because of, you know, just, you know, categorizing them in certain groupings based on whether it's color or economics, you know, status, that, well, since they're in this category, we should just let them deal with it the best that they know how. It's demeaning. It's a soft bigotry of low expectations. We need to stop treating certain groups of people like children. It's demeaning. It is elitist. And sadly, it's a reflection that a lot of folks who run these cities have written all of these people off as, well, there's no use in even expecting them to try and behave in a civilized manner or be contributors to society. They're a lost cause. And while, in fact, some individuals may be that way, seeing entire groups of people that way, it's wrong. Here's Parker Pageant with the latest traffic. I am Nick Reed. This is Springfield's Talk 104.1. Got a free digital education series, webinar series, June 4th. So that is coming up just a few days from now. Clients, businesses here in the Ozarks, you can join the free digital education series. Many questions on how to best use digital advertising to increase profitability. And these webinars are set to answer those questions. So it's so much more than, you know, well, I use Facebook to promote. Oh, okay. There's a lot more to it than that. And it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. Get details at ksgf.com. A political science professor who predicted President Trump's win back in 2016 is forecasting another victory. In an interview on the Ingram Angle, Stony Brook University's Helmut Northpol stated Friday that he believes the key to another victory for the president lies in the examination of primary races, explaining the key to the November election is in the primaries, and the only primaries are already giving us a lot of information. Based on that, Donald Trump won them very easily for his party. He continued, Joe Biden, the likely nominee for the Democrats, had a great deal of trouble holding it together, but on balance, it's the stronger performance of primaries that gives Donald Trump the edge in November. Northrop's primary model shows that President Trump has a 91% chance of being reelected and also shows he will get 362 electoral votes. The model is based on a statistical and historical theory that the professor outlines. That said, according to Newsday, there are some factors that the professor doesn't take into account, like the state of the world, a pandemic, an unprecedented economic crisis, a country in turmoil over systemic racial injustices, in which states Trump would have to win to clinch 362 electoral votes. The president would need to carry all of the states he won in 2016, plus New Mexico, Nevada, Colorado, Vermont, Virginia, Minnesota, Maine, and New Hampshire. Northup conceded to Ingram that the COVID-19 pandemic could have an impact the model doesn't take into account, but noted that he's not seen a dent in Trump's approval rating. In fact, in the early goings, he got a little uptick, and unless his approval rating collapses, I don't think that this would have much bearing on my forecast, he remarked. He advised Trump had some strong points that gave him the big win in the primaries, and I think he has to take advantage of that, and I think anything that distracts from that would not be good for him. And Biden, of course, you know, get these national polls, but Hillary Clinton beat Trump in the national polls as well. It may seem obvious that Trump, like, well, of course Trump did better in the primaries than Biden did. Trump was running unopposed. I mean, there were a few Republicans that decided to throw their hat in the ring, but of course it was meaningless. Let me explain what this is. This is about enthusiasm. And it isn't about percentage of vote, but it's about the number of people who got out to vote. And something that Trump was seeing early on is, in some instances, record turnout of voting, even though he didn't have an opponent. And if there is a level of enthusiasm that causes a record number of people to come out and vote when there is no opponent to even face, that is where you see an enthusiasm there that is pretty difficult to put a dent in. Now, the last election, enthusiasm was something that I talked about being the key to Trump's victory. One of the reasons, though, that it is difficult to use in predicting a win is because you can't put a number on it. There are all sorts of models, and we hear these models explained, well, you have a GDP of this, and that means that you're going to get this many points. Or if you have an unemployment rate of this, historically this happens, and it's numbers. They look at numbers. They look at unemployment numbers. They look at, income numbers. They look at all of these economic satisfaction numbers. And then they go back in time and they see, how does that translate to incumbents winning re-election? How does that translate to midterm elections? And so they'll take that and they use that as a predictor. But enthusiasm, you can't put a number on. You could go around and ask people on a scale from 1 to 10 how enthusiastic are you about your candidate, but that's still, it's not a hard number. That is a matter of opinion. The only way that you can really truly measure enthusiasm is by people's behavior. Because if you just ask them, some people will lie. Now, if you're a hardcore Democrat and you really, really, you don't like Biden, you're indifferent, but you really hate Trump, and you're asked, how enthusiastic are you about Biden? You might say, oh, I'm very enthusiastic, because you don't want to give the impression you're not. So people can lie about that. People lie in polling all the time anyway. So how is it that you measure enthusiasm? It's through action. And one of those actions is people showing up to vote, even when there isn't a challenger. Another way, of course, you see it at the events, these events that Trump had during the last election and the events that he was having just to announce his re-election or his run for re-election. I mean, people that was in Florida camping out 48 hours in advance. That is enthusiasm that causes people to go out to the polls. You see, there is this misunderstanding a lot of people have. They think, all right, you have this huge pool of Americans. And you have a little portion of people that know that they're going to vote Democrat and a little portion of the people that know they're going to vote Republican. And then in the middle, you have these mass numbers of people that are figuring out for whom they are going to vote. But that's not the reality of what goes on. The number of individuals that are these so-called swing voters is very, very, very small. So that small number is a contributing factor to who it is that wins. But sometimes, more importantly, is, and you've heard this terminology before, getting out the base. And the lack of enthusiasm amongst your own base can sometimes wipe out completely and even give you a deficit of overall voters when you have the swing vote come out. You know, say you get the swing vote for you, but if you don't have enthusiasm, that can cancel it out. You have to get your own people out. You have to get your own base out. And this, while so many predictors are looking at economic numbers or looking at just polling of people over a national scene, what is largely being measured here by Stony Brook University Helmut North Poll is enthusiasm. And he judges that based on primary turnout, and in particular for somebody who's running unchallenged. So anyway, that's what he found. It's one of a million different perspectives, but I do think that it holds a lot more weight, certainly than these national polls, in particular given that we don't do a national election. It is the president of the United States, which is why the individual states vote, and then that's how we choose the presidents. These national polls, anyhow, are largely irrelevant. Quick break. We're going to get a traffic update. I'm Nick Reed. Here he is, everyone. Don Luzader.
Good morning. Police in Springfield are fully supporting those who peacefully demonstrated at Glenstone and Battlefield over the weekend following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And many of the protesters say they appreciate the backing of local law enforcement. Several of them were seen on video shaking hands with officers who asked them to stop spray painting the pavement along the median. Next, the police investigating an act of vandalism after responding to a call at City Hall over the weekend to find spray paint stretched across the side of the building that faces Highway 14. That spray paint included expletives, insults at cops, and the name George Floyd. Floyd died in police custody in Minnesota, sparking nationwide protests over the weekend. And the State Health Department says COVID-19 cases are up to 13,147. In Missouri, those officials are reporting an uptick in coronavirus deaths as 34 people died from COVID over the weekend, bringing the total number of deaths in the state to 772. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements, 20% discount for everyone now. Sunny 82 for a high today, cloud 60 tonight, sunny 85 tomorrow with a chance of showers, thunderstorms on Wednesday after 1, otherwise mostly sunny with a I have 87. It is 64 and sunny at the KSGF studios. Hey, if you are purchasing a pre-owned vehicle, I cannot stress enough the need for you to get an inspection. This is an inspection of the vehicle. This isn't, I'm not talking about the government mandated one in order to get your license, but to find out what exactly you're buying. I learned this the hard way before I really even knew about this as a service. I had purchased a pre-owned vehicle several years ago, and I put into it at least as much, if not more, than what I paid for it because of one problem after another. It was probably the single largest financial mistake I ever made in my life. I could have saved myself all of that money if I had just gone to A1 Custom Car Care and said, hey, will you look through this and tell me exactly what I'm buying? I recommend you do the same thing. Save yourself a lot of heartache. And money, perhaps. Fort and Sunshine, Springfield. Highway 60 Republic and West Sunset across from Classic Rock Coffee. That is A1 Custom Car Care. All right, let's see here. There is a... Sometimes you just wonder, you're like, I don't know which way this story is going. There is an artist by the name of Lana Del Rey. I'm familiar with her to some degree. She is facing backlash from her fans. I'll just read to you the story. Lana Del Rey is once again facing backlash from her fans, this time over a video showing looters in the riots over George Floyd's death. Earlier this month, Del Rey took to Instagram to address criticism that her music was glamorizing abuse. In the message, Del Rey called out a plethora of other artists for making songs about being sexy, wearing no clothes, blanking, cheating, etc. Most of the women listed by Del Rey are black, causing followers to accuse her of racial bias in her response. Now, amid nationwide protests and riots, Del Rey is facing criticism for sharing up-close and personal videos of the looters. Twitter users have accused Del Rey, 34, of sharing a minute-long video of looters to her 16.5 million followers on Instagram. Now, first of all, since Twitter users have accused her of it, there's no way she did it. I mean, she posted this video. No one's denied it's her account. It's accusing her of doing it. Fans immediately took to social media to slam the singer for her choice to expose so many individuals, saying Lana Del Rey posted a minute-long video of people looting stores for her 16.5 million followers to see, said one Twitter user. She even zoomed in. I have no words. Another saying, I'm sorry at Lana Del Rey, but I'm done with you. I'm going to be selling your vinyls and highly sought at Coke necklace and merch, and donating whatever I make to Black Lives Matter. Several of Del Rey's contemporaries also called her out online, including singer Kalani, who was one of the women Del Rey named in the post earlier. She would, another singer, remove the post. And, you know, it's, as is oftentimes the case with these news stories, three quarters of it are people on Twitter that are angry. She would delete the video. Final paragraph of the story reads, protests have broken out across the nation in opposition to police brutality after George Floyd, an African-American Minneapolis man, died after a white police officer pinned a knee on his neck for several minutes as he struggled for air. Now, this story opens up talking about how Del Rey has recently been criticized for glamorizing abuse. And that her music was glamorizing abuse. And then it goes into the fact that she's being criticized for filming some of these looters. Now, here's what I don't know for sure, and I don't know that it's not a mixed bag. Is she being criticized for glamorizing the abuse by filming the looters, or is she being criticized for exposing the looters instead of siding with them and keeping their anonymity? Because, you know, one way of looking at it, she is anti-looters, and the other, she is pro-looters, depending on from where the criticism comes. Now, the opening of it, which identifies her recent controversy as glamorizing violence, would indicate that, all right, we're setting the stage here for a story about how she is being, you know, criticized once again for glamorizing violence, for glamorizing looting. Here she is helping make these people famous. She's putting them in a light here that is going to, you know, glorify it, because that's what she's been accused of in the past. But on the other hand, it sounds as if they're mad because she might be identifying these individuals, and you know, they may be held accountable for destroying property that is owned by their fellow citizens or burning down people's homes. This, in terms of a news story, is awful, because you don't even really know for sure what she's being, which direction the criticism is coming. And I don't know that the author of the piece even knows. Now, if she is being criticized for some of the tweets sound as if they're mad at her because these looters may be identified. And that is, you know, based on one of the tweets listed in the news story where they say that she even zoomed in on them. Zoomed in on them so you could see who they were. Now, I thought that none of us supported the looters and rioters. Why all of a sudden is there such concern for people who are destroying minority-owned businesses? Why is there such concern with protecting the anonymity of individuals that are destroying low-income minority housing? You can't really have it both ways. On one hand, you can't, I mean, I suppose you can, but you're going to be identified as being hypocritical or dishonest when you say, no, we're about peaceful protesting. But then when somebody identifies a criminal, and by the way, these people aren't hiding. You know, I mean, they're out there in the open, allowing themselves to be filmed. And if on one hand the presentation is that, oh, no, we're definitely against those who are victimizing minorities. But then you criticize someone who exposes who those people are. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't make any sense. I think that there, people, you know what this is for a lot of people? This is fulfilling a need to have a purpose. And I'm not talking about those who are looting necessarily. I'm talking about the folks in our society that are on social media championing one side on this, and that is those who are looting. It gives them a purpose. It makes them feel involved. It makes them woke. And I don't know that ever, at least in my lifetime, has there been a period where we have so many people walking around this country feeling no purpose in life. And so they try to artificially fill it. They identify something that other people in a sort of social media frenzy are all participating in. And they're drawn towards it because there's one thing that every human being is drawn towards, and that is a sense of purpose, feeling as if they matter. And attaching themselves to something like this, getting emotionally involved and engaged, and defending one side, no matter how many people of color they victimize, no matter how many minority businesses they burn to the ground, it fulfills that emptiness they have of feeling as if there is some sort of purpose in their life. Now, I'm not saying every single person involved or that has an opinion on this falls into that category, but a large portion of the population does. And you can recognize that because their positions oftentimes make no sense at all. Or they are completely contradictory. Anyone who truly cares about minorities would not support people burning down homes of minorities. Anyone who truly cares about minorities would not support people who burn down minority businesses. It doesn't make sense. I used the analogy earlier, but I'll use it again because I think it drives the point home. It would be as if law enforcement, after a police officer is shot, decided to protest by burning down homes of police officers. And then people who say they support police officers cheering it on. Now, how much sense would that make? It doesn't. There's no logic attached to it. It is purely emotionally driven. And yeah, I frankly don't know why anyone weighs in on this stuff on social media. And that is to some degree easy for me to say because I have an outlet to discuss these things, and instinctually as human beings, when we see things going on that people are talking about, many of us want to weigh in on them. So I get to get it out of my system. Now, if I didn't do it this way, would I use social media? I doubt it, because the only reason I even use social media is because it's something that, you know, in the past I was just forced to do because, you know, it's part of marketing yourself and so forth. And I don't do it nearly as well as I could or should. But nonetheless, it's just something I don't understand. And there's no winning. There's no winning for any of, particularly celebrities, weighing in one way or another. I just don't know. What is the point? What is the goal? And here you have what seemingly, I don't even know what Del Rey's point was. I don't know if she was trying to glorify the violence or if she was trying to identify those who were committing acts of violence or looting against minority-owned businesses and homes. And I don't think the people who are mad at her know either. First time I realized that we had become a society in which people would allow themselves to get outraged without even knowing why necessarily was several years ago. And I'm not going to get the teams or the announcers right, because I don't follow college sports in particular, but there was some college football game, and as oftentimes is done, the camera will focus in on the parents or the family or friends of one of the top players. And the camera had done just that, and one, if not the one individual that it was focused on, was the girlfriend of this quarterback, whatever college, university this was. And one of the two guys, I don't know if he was one of the announcers, made a comment about how attractive she was. Well, everyone went nuts. In the social media world, anyhow. I think the guy lost his job or he got pulled from, because he paid a compliment. She was asked about it. She's like, oh, I take it as a compliment. Like, why'd everybody get so upset? Nobody could even say why. Well, because he said she was pretty. So what? But you're not allowed to be pretty anymore. You're not allowed to compliment someone. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of people that have gotten themselves worked into a frenzy over this, and they can't even identify why. Then I, in time, learned that there are people who feel emptiness in their life, and being part of an outraged mob gives them a sense of community and purpose. And that's what a lot of people seek. The problem is, it is like a drug in the sense that it goes away quickly, because it's not a real, true, genuine purpose. And like a drug, once it goes away, there is an even greater craving for it than there was before. And there is a desire to seek out more of it. Hence social justice warriors. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. Our Facebook Live page, great place for y'all to watch the show, listen to the show. Here's a good question. I saw the picture of the protest here in Springfield. I did not know they were happening. I just stayed at home all weekend. I'm glad I did. I have just one question, though. I didn't see much social distancing. So my question is, did Bob Dixon label them as selfish, reckless, and no concern for others? Bob is the Greene County Commissioner. Isn't this something that he should be concerned about? Jeff, thank you for the comment. This is a incident of you know, highlighting the inconsistencies and how differently people get treated. And of course, the county had described those who refused to social distance, those who would try to open their businesses and argued for opening their businesses, as being selfish. And so where are they now? Where are they now? There's no way to know this because you can't create a time machine. But you do wonder, would Springfield have shut down the intersection of Glenstone and Battlefield for the folks who were protesting for the government to allow businesses to open back up? I happen to believe they would not have. I can't prove that. I can't even know it for sure. But I suspect that if they had gone down there to City Hall and said, hey, will you block off this intersection for us? We want to have a protest, that they would have said, no way. No, are you out of your mind? They do get treated differently. Hillary Clinton. I wonder, actually, let's see, I think I have the audio. Not of Hillary. Hillary called folks who were showing up at some of these events, some armed, within the legal rights to do so. They were armed in a legal fashion as they protested the government shutting stuff down, as domestic terrorists. It was, let's see if I do have the, I don't think I have the audio. One of these MSNBC folks was openly asking, why was it these protesters who were armed at the Capitol in Michigan not treated like these protesters? You really not know the answer to that? Well, because of their actions. These so-called domestic terrorists were not violating any laws. They were even complying with social distancing in most instances. They weren't burning anything to the ground. They weren't attacking police officers. They weren't attacking their fellow citizens. They weren't dragging people from cars and beating them. They weren't lighting things on fire while everyone stood around and cheered. You really don't know why people who were protesting the opening up of the government shutting businesses down weren't treated like looters who are burning a city to the ground? I mean, that's a pretty profound display of ignorance to not know the answer. Now, of course, the implication was, well, because they were white. Of course, that's absurd. It's about actions. And if you have two individuals, I don't care what color they are, one breaks a law and gets arrested. The other doesn't break a law. That's why one gets arrested and one doesn't. Parker with the latest traffic update for this hour. I'm Nick Reed. Springfield's Talk 104.1. All right, we got another full hour coming up, my friends. Let's see. The Queen City Motors talk and text line 447-KSGF. News in 60 seconds. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk 104.1.